Hey y'all, thanks for joining us for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. As we travel around the country and chat with rose lovers, the topic often turns to winter protecting our roses. Now here in Alabama, we don't winter protect because it's not sustainably cold for any period of time. But on today's episode, Teresa's chatting with Joe and Carrie Bergs. Now this Wisconsin couple maintains a rose garden of over 350 roses, and they're no stranger to a cold winter. They're here with some innovative ideas on how they winter protect their rose collection from Old Man Winter. Y'all stay with us. The Rose Chat Podcast starts now.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hello, friends. Today I'm joined by Joe and Carrie Bergs. If you were at the ARS National Convention in September, perhaps you visited their beautiful garden. Now, Joe and Carrie grow about 350 roses in Wisconsin, where the climate tends to be a bit difficult on roses, especially during the winter. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So, hey, guys, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hi.
Hi, Teresa.
It's so good to have you. So let's start out by giving our listeners an overview of what type of roses you're growing in your garden. Tell us a little bit about your garden. What's going on there?
Well, we have had the most beautiful fall, I think, in the history of falls, ever since we've been paying attention to fall for 35 years now. Our roses right after the convention just enjoyed the 4 inches of rain that we received and the beautiful weather. And we were cutting rose bouquets up until probably a week ago, when we were hit with our first couple large frosts. So we have really had a beautiful fall up here. It's hard to get into the winter protection mode now. Today it's 65 here, so it's beautiful. But our garden is ready to get put to bed. And actually, when we were on the garden tour for the National Convention in September, which was great fun, and we had 130 people here, just enjoyed it so much that day. But people were really interested in coming into the shed to see our winter protection program. And I thought the people from California, when they saw pictures of our garden after a polar vortex a couple years ago, I thought they were just going to pass out and fall to the ground because they just have never seen anything like that. So not only were they here to see the roses, but they really were curious as to how, in this climate, we get our roses through the winter. So that was really fun because that is a unique talent that we have up here.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the kinds of roses that are there.
So we have a large bed dedicated primarily to exhibition roses of all kinds. So minis, mini floras, floribundas, hybrid teas. The back row are all Austin shrubs. And so it's a pretty contained rose garden. How many feet, Joe?
So probably it's about 55 feet wide and maybe 70 feet deep.
So it's all roses, with arbors and white fences and all that kind of thing. And then in other parts of the property, we have miscellaneous roses. Like we have an old garden rose bed on the side of an old barn. And then we have various Austins kind of tucked around in various places. So, I would say totally we probably have about 400 roses. But the main garden is really an exhibition garden.
Right. And then we have climbers on fence line.
Oh, yeah. And then we have an entire fence line full of all sorts of different climbers. So lots of things going on here.
I just can't even believe that I didn't make it to the convention. And definitely you guys are on my bucket list. And maybe next year when they're blooming, I'm coming.
Well, we would love to have you up here.
We want to come.
And bring friends.
Okay. You talked a lot about exhibition roses. So tell our listeners a little bit about some of the awards. You're not just growing roses and up there in the cold land. You're growing beautiful roses. So you're winning all kinds of awards. So tell us just a little bit about the awards that you won in Milwaukee.
Well, Milwaukee was especially exciting because, of course, you have somewhat of an advantage because you are local rose growers with a local national convention. But we were very, very excited to exhibit and very excited that the convention was able to go on, even regardless of COVID. So that was nice. Actually, we had a horrible summer this year with very little rain. So we did not bring our usual hoard of roses, 40, 50, 60, 70 entries to the Rose Show. We only brought a few, but it was really nice because we didn't have to get there until 8 in the morning and the show closed at 10. So it wasn't like we were up at 4. So, but we were so excited. We had no idea this was coming. Cindy Dale came up to us. She was one of the judges who was judging the best in show class. And she came up and she said, "You guys, just congratulations. You just won the Garden Web Trophy." And I said, "What? What Garden Web Trophy?" I said, "We did? With what?" She says, "Dancing Pink." And there we looked, and our Dancing Pink spray had been judged the best of the show in Milwaukee. So that was particularly memorable because it was our show, our city, and then we won best in show. So that was really exciting. We also won 2 World Federation boxes, which I love the box class. It's one of my favorite classes. We won with a beautiful box of Quietness and then David Austin's. It was a big American box. And Bob Martin said it was one of the most well put together, unusual boxes he had seen. So he was very complimentary. And then we won another World Federation class with 3 beautiful sprays of Joy, that darling little pink mini rose. So we had a really good show considering, we only brought a handful of roses with us. It was great fun. The whole convention was fabulous.
Oh, that sounds so good. Now, Joe, I've heard that you're doing some work with ARS as far as rose shows in general. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so Satish's headed up the exhibition committee, and we are hoping to be a little bit more active than the exhibition committee has been in the past. And we're going to try to come up with some proposals for including judges in exhibiting. And we really want to have, all sorts of people, that aren't maybe just your usual exhibitors, but having all members of a Rose Society involved in Rose shows and that sort of thing. So we're really looking forward to that.
Oh, it sounds great. I don't grow a lot of hybrid teas in my style of gardening, which is a cottage garden. So, but I have lots of roses. So maybe there'll be some classes for people like me who grow maybe a different kind of rose.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just want to be inclusive. And, there's always room for the people that do the usual exhibition stuff, but we want to really get everybody enthusiastic and excited. One of the things that I talked to Carrie about this last week is we could have a high-low class where you'd actually have an experienced exhibitor along with a junior.
A child. So you're really a high-low.
Oh, great. I love it. It's a great idea.
So it's a great way to involve kids and, have the experienced exhibitor help them pick out something and grow it and, just bring more people in.
So I think Joe and Satish will make a really, really good team. They're both physicians, but very creative thinkers. So, and all about including all sorts of people. So maybe, Teresa, you'll see a class for cottage garden roses coming up.
Wouldn't that be so perfect? Okay,
perfect.
So that sounds wonderful. And we got to get back to winter care. So we talked about these wildly fluctuating temperatures. You're having them, we're having them. So my first question is, how do you know when it's time to start the winter protection?
So one of the rules of thumb that we've gotten from people that we have really been mentored by is to have at least 2 or 3 hard frosts. So anything below 28. What's kind of interesting is that our garden, we tend to be in a cold spot for whatever reason, so we get pretty hard frost when other people are not. But usually 28 has been kind of our measure. So we've had at least a couple of those this last week, and are ready to start cutting our roses back.
So now for the big how. How do you winter protect these roses?
So I just wanted to add quickly is that one of the things that I feel like is so important about getting roses through the winter time is really having them taken care of well into the fall. So I think that some people kind of let their roses go and they have a lot of black spot and downy or powdery mildew and that sort of thing. So I make sure that we spray through until you start getting frost. It just keeps the roses in healthier shape. So, and make sure that they're watered and that sort of thing. So, but we have a variety of different methods that we use for protecting our roses. So our main beds where we have our hybrid teas and floribundas and mini floras, we put in boxes. So these basically look like caskets on top of roses. And kind of like you would see in New Orleans when you walk into a cemetery. So they're made by framing up 2x2s are used for the frame. And then on top, we use 1.5 inches of foamular. It's, you know, your Owens Corning kind of house insulation. And then on the sides, we use anywhere from 1/2 to 3/4 inch. And that really works well. I mean, sometimes if we don't have winters that are too drastic, you can open up those boxes in the spring and they look like you put the roses in the fall. The leaves are still green and that really is impressive. So that's how we take care of our main beds. And then for our shrub beds, we use concrete blankets on top of kitty litter or 5-gallon pails or peony rings or whatever we need to keep the concrete blankets off of the roses to at least provide some structure for the blankets to go over. So that really works pretty well also. And we, this last year, got a couple of custom blankets that are R7, but R5 is what you'd probably get through most of the big box stores, and that sort of thing works pretty well also. Oh,
if I can interject for 1 second, the R value is really important when you're looking at either foam or you're looking at construction blankets. The R value is the construction industry's measure of how the insulation value. So the higher the R value, the more insulation the blanket or the foam provides. So that's just a technical thing.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
And did you say that they're available at Lowe's? Are they easy to find?
So I think that you can get them through Home Depot and Menards. Sometimes you have to order them rather than just picking them up at the store. But they're available at those sort of places. Or you can just go online and look at construction blankets in some different places will come up. The ones that we use are either 6 foot wide by 25 feet or 12 foot wide by 25 feet, kind of depending on whether we're doing a single row or a double row of roses.
And most of our blankets are R7. So we went with the highest end construction blanket that was available to us. So
I'm still just blown away by the fact that you can take the lid off of the roses and they look like they looked when you put them in. I mean, that is just amazing to me. So that takes me to the next question is, how do you know when it's time to take those box lids off?
That's the trick.
So it is tricky because when it's starting to get warmer in the spring, we have frost here until middle of May. And that's pretty consistent. So you're really tempted. You have this warm week in late April, early May, and you're thinking, well, I can just take the box tops off and so on and so forth. So what I do is really to crack them, you know, to give them, you know, a foot open or a couple of feet open and to let some light in and some air in and that sort of thing. But then when you have frost, to be able to close them back up. You do get into a little bit of a pickle if they really start to grow early and they're butting up against the top of the box tops. So what one of our rose growers does is he has a PVC conduit that he puts into a little bit of an semicircle that goes above the boxes, and he puts like frost cloth or blankets and that sort of thing over it so that you have more room for the roses to grow. Mm-hmm. I haven't quite gotten that far yet, but I think that that's probably a good idea too.
The big issue that we found last year, even, our roses came out of the boxes just beautifully. You know, you're tempted, you go and you open the box, which I think we did early April, and they look beautiful. We had a great winter because we had snow cover. The boxes were covered in snow, so that was an added layer of insulation. But then we were hit with a couple of very hard frosts, including on Mother's Day, and the boxes were open. And then all that new growth that's coming just gets whacked in the frost. And so we decided that this year we are not touching those boxes until well after the middle of May, when we know that we can open them safely. And we do keep the sides up until the 1st of June because, you know, it's the wind that will desiccate the roses. It's not just always the cold. I mean, the wind can do more damage to roses by desiccating them than the cold can. So,
and yeah, we're really out in the open where we're at. Yeah. So that's some people that are more in the city, it's not as much of an issue for them, but we're really out.
We're in a rural area, so the wind comes sweeping from the southwest and you can't do anything about it. Our roses are right in the way. So,
yeah, wind can be so damaging, so damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the one other thing I just wanted to mention is we have a whole row of roses that are just kind of by themselves, you know, not an easy place to put concrete blankets on and that sort of thing. And what I've done is to use peony rings around them. And then we use a product called Reflectix. We just wrap it around the peony ring and fold it over on the top. And that has worked great for roses that are sort of in an individual situation. And I find that it works better than the rose cones because you can kind of open it up.
Reflectix is a product that they use in heating and air conditioning to surround, insulate the heating and cooling. To wrap ductwork with. And so it is very flexible and it comes in these huge, big rolls so you can cut it to size. So we just make individual little rose houses out of that Reflectix and use clamps to keep it closed and attach it. So the climbers on the fence line last year came through the winter the best that they ever have, you know, primarily because they were protected from the wind up there, I think.
Wow.
So that's a really easy thing to do.
Oh, that sounds really great. You know, it's just in every area we have different problems. Right now, my husband is working on adding fencing, high fencing enough to deter the deer. You know, as I said, we have a cottage garden and it's fenced in, but not a really tall fence. Last year, the deer jumped in, ate the roses, ate so much. I mean, so many deer. So we're trying to figure out how to pleasingly add a layer of fencing to protect our roses and our garden. So we're always having to use our head to get inventive to protect what we love out in the elements.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point. I mentioned when the people from California looked at our rose boxes and the damage done by a polar vortex, they were just in shock. But here we don't have to deal with chili thrips, which is a great thing. We don't have to deal with drought typically, or, you know, lack of water. And I think of the people in Arizona who deal with these very, very hot summers who have to construct elaborate systems of shade cloth for their roses. So you're right. Every region just has its own challenges and you get used to dealing with them if you want to grow.
You sure do. You sure do. And, you know, it's not just the roses. I have other plants that are just, you know, trying to grow, and they're very susceptible to the deer and other things. So, you know, all those things that we love, it's always a challenge. You know, even in the Garden of Eden, they had their challenges. So.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they certainly did. Well, guys, you're so knowledgeable, and I know you do a lot of mentoring and that sort of thing in your area. So before I let you go, what about some general tips? So someone's listening and they're just getting started growing roses in your area. What are some general tips that you would give to help them get started well?
I think that the most important thing to do is to decide really in the beginning, how much effort do you want to put into your roses? So that really dictates the type of roses that you grow. If you have a lot of time and you are an enthusiastic rose grower and you want to cut beautiful bouquets of hybrid teas to take to your workplace or to exhibit, well, that's a whole different level of commitment than if you want to grow, a row of beautiful knockouts in the front of your yard, or if you want to do, you know, Austins like you do within a cottage country kind of garden. So I think that's the very first thing you have to do is decide how much time and energy, what your philosophy about spraying is. So that's the first thing that you have to do. And do your research, like with anything. Research the types of roses that will fit your lifestyle.
Right, and I think that it's interesting because people will just go to a garden store and pick up roses, and they'll spend 3 hours figuring out what microwave they want to buy, and reading through reviews and all of that sort of thing. And they don't spend the same amount of time, you know, kind of thinking about what they're putting in their garden. So I think that even spending a little bit of that time, you know, would really be helpful for them. And then the other tip that I would have is just, you know, I would probably lay out our garden slightly differently if I knew where we were going to get to, but sometimes that's a little bit hard. You don't know when you put in your first 10 that you're going to end up with 300.
Lessons learned.
Yes.
But I would also encourage people too to explore the resources in your community. You know, you have a rose society, probably, most likely. I would try and join your local rose society. I would go on the ARS website. There's so much information on the ARS website, American Rose website, rose.org. So it's really all about doing your homework. And it's understanding your zone and your climate. And, you know, even in a 5A climate zone, which is where we are, you know, it depends on where you plant your roses. If it's in the corner of a house, well, it's a much happier, safer rose over the course of the winter than if it is out in our, you know, exhibition bed out in the field. So, you just educate yourself is, I think, my best advice. And
I think that whenever possible, if you can get to people's rose gardens to actually see their roses and how they're growing and where they're growing them and that sort of thing, I think that that's great too.
I mean, we've had people stop on the road who have seen the roses and they see us outside and they say, can we just come in and look at your rose garden? You know, we would let anybody into our, well, I think almost anybody into our rose garden if they stopped. But, you know, that's just a great way to learn is to just ask people who, you know, your neighbors or, you know, what works in your yard.
And I think that rose societies really can have an emphasis about meeting at people's rose gardens instead of just meeting in a church hall or, you know, somewhere. I mean, getting out into people's yards, I think, is so fun and educational, too, to just see what other people do. I mean, we have somebody who buries all of their roses during the winter time in these pits. So we would have never known that had we not like visited somebody's yard. So.
Oh, that's where the ideas are. I agree. And it's also, it keeps us on our toes when we have people in our garden and they ask questions that we kind of forget that we know or like, oh, yes. And, you know, people see our gardens in different ways. And so it is a great classroom. I love that idea. I think that's something that our rose societies could do more of. I know there's a few of our societies that actually have study gardens and so they can have people there. But, you know, just doing all sorts of things, having different workshops and that kind of thing in an actual garden is so different.
Right.
Absolutely. And for those in our area, we found a new resource this year. Bruce and Maggie Barr, who are the National Convention Chairs, found a garden center down in Evanston, Illinois, which is really not too far from the Milwaukee area and, of course, right very close to Chicago. So in this area, I would highly recommend this new place they found. It's called Gethsemane Gardens, perfect name for a garden center, right? Mm-hmm. And it's huge, and it's right in the middle of downtown Evanston, Illinois, and she can get almost any rose that you want. She was phenomenal. She brought roses up to the convention. She has big, beautiful, healthy roses. You pay a little bit more, but you are getting a really high quality product. So I would just like to put in a plug for Gethsemane Gardens in Evanston, Illinois, if people are really interested in growing and purchasing roses.
Are there other places, Carrie, that you guys find roses? Because sometimes they're getting a little hard to find.
They are getting. We have up here Milliger's, which in the Milwaukee area has a tremendous, they must have what, I don't know. In a typical year, they probably have 2,000 roses available for sale. Last year was a little different because of the issues down in Texas with the winter. And then we also have Blumel's Garden Center up here. So I think to go to a quality garden center, typically they have, rose, quote unquote, experts on their staff that are happy to talk to you. You know, they're the rose buyers and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I would definitely, go to a reputable garden center. Not that you can't find great roses in big box stores, too. You can. But if you want to learn about roses, I would go to a specialty garden center.
Right. And we've ordered two from a variety of places online. Rogue Valley Roses, I think, does a nice job. Antique Rose Emporium does a nice job. High Country Roses. So I think that those are some of the places that we have gotten some really quality roses from. K&M, I think, does a nice job. So there are a variety of places online as well that you can get bare root roses or sometimes potted as well.
Yes, I use those suppliers too and have great luck with all of those online suppliers. So, yes, it's just so great to have them. Because locally we used to have a whole lot more resources than we do now. And so we do want to find the roses to grow. Now, Carrie, we want to congratulate you because you were just named treasurer of the American Rose Society. So how's it going?
It's going. I just gave my first treasurer's report to the board meeting last week. Diane Summers, who's the ARS president, has decided that we are going to be meeting as a board every 10 weeks, which I think is a great idea because I think that the ARS needs very focused leadership over the next 3 years if we expect to grow and become a more successful organization. So, but that just meant that I really had to speed up my learning curve on becoming treasurer. I felt like I went through my own personal warp speed or Operation Warp Speed here to get all of that financial background. So, but Diane said to me, she said, Carrie, reporting numbers is all about telling a story, which I'm really good at telling stories. So I just sort of had to train myself to read the numbers in order to tell the story. So it's going really well. I'm really excited to be in this position, and I think I have a lot to offer. So I will be telling stories about numbers for the next 3 years.
I love that. Stories and numbers. It's just perfect. Absolutely perfect. Well, guys, this has been wonderful. I just appreciate so much your joining me today. And boy, do I appreciate all that you do for the world of roses, your local society, the American Rose Society, and those special people that you're mentoring. So thanks so much.
Well, you are welcome. It's always fun to be with you, Teresa.
Absolutely.
Well, friends, we appreciate you too. Thanks for listening today. And if you want to hear Carrie talk in depth about some of her favorite pink roses that she calls her pink ladies, you can look for that episode in our list of podcasts on rosechatpodcast.com. And whether I like it or not, and whether the weather is unseasonably warm or not, winter is coming and it's time to put the garden to bed. And I guess I need to be happy. At least my house plants will be happy. So they'll see more of me. And I think it's going to be fun to get to that stack of garden books I've been collecting. Maybe you've been doing that too. Regardless, stay tuned. We'll be back soon with another edition of Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.